potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Courier, Zack Snyder's Justice League, Slacks, and the TV series Invincible and Staged Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Disney+. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is a sad piece of news. We have to say goodbye to Yaphet Kotto. He died on March 15th at the age of 81. If you don't know who he is, he played, best known as one of the engineers on the original Alien. He and Henry Dean Stanton were the guys who were supposed to be fixing the things. He was the big black guy from that. He was also in Live and Let Die, the James Bond movie, which took place in Harlem. It's I believe, the first one that Roger Moore did. Yaphet Kotto was an immensely powerful actor, and he was intense, and he always seemed to play the heavy, but he was more than just a big guy who could look grumpy and powerful on screen. I mean, he had some real acting chops beneath him. So he's done some great stuff over the years. And he, like I said, one of the more memorable characters in Alien. And I think it's great that he also had his chance to do a Bond villain too. So you will be missed. Next piece of news is I want to talk about the Oscar nominations. They came out Monday. And I've always said I don't like using the term snub, because to me, when you say snub, you're implying that everybody else in that category who was nominated didn't deserve it. The only time that I do take issue is when they can have up to 10 best pictures. And when they have like 8, I'm like, really? You couldn't squeeze a couple more in there? Like, for example, you don't have One Night in Miami, which got a bunch of other nominations. And the other thing that's interesting is you always get these weird splits with directors versus best picture. And while movies like Mank, Minari, Nomadland, and Promising Young Woman all got nominated for both, Thomas Vinterberg got nominated for Another Round, which stars Mads Mikkelsen. But Another Round wasn't nominated for best picture. It's nominated for best international feature. But the fact that, you know, some of these people who directed the other movies on the best picture list, you know, you're likely not going to win those. That's usually what that means to me. It was a great year in terms of nominations for diversity. There are a lot of people of color in the nominated roles. You have, of course, in directing, Chloe Zhao, who directed Nomadland. She won the Golden Globe. I think she's the first Asian American woman to be nominated for best director. If you got the actor in a leading role, Steven Yeun from Minari got nominated. So there's a lot of representation in there. And I don't know if that's necessarily because of the quality of films that came. I mean, obviously it's the quality of films, but they've been making a bigger attempt to diversify the Academy. And I don't know if this is partly what we're seeing happening, which is a good thing because representation matters. And you know, diversity in the world we have today absolutely does matter. Now, there are a couple things I wish there would have been more nominations for. I wish that at the very least, Delroy Lindo would have gotten some nomination for The Five Bloods. I think one of the reasons that didn't happen is it just was out too early. I also feel sad for all the other actors in actor in the leading role, because Chadwick Boseman is probably a shoo-in for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and he absolutely deserves it. But for the other actors in that category, I mean, when you have a beloved actor dies unexpectedly and does a great performance, it's likely that's the performance that's going to win. I'm happy to see Maria Bakalova get a nomination for Best Supporting Actress for Borat's subsequent movie film. Plus, Glenn Close getting a nomination for Hillbilly Elegy. Even though that movie wasn't great, she was really good in it and did a transformative performance. So there's a lot of great people represented. It's an interesting list. Not terribly surprising for what's on there. I think there are some surprises of what's not on there. But, you know, hey, that's what you get anytime you have an award slate. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is a documentary that's coming to HBO Max on March 30th, and that is The Last Cruise.
This is your captain speaking. Please be advised that two guests tested positive for coronavirus.
It was just all kind of hearsay. Like, oh, there's a virus. There's always something around the world going on. Still not a big deal. You're kind of like, okay, cool. I'll wash my hands.
Then the captain came on and told us to go back into our rooms.
The length of the quarantine will be at least 14 days.
This is documenting the Princess Cruise Line ship that was quarantined in Japan last February and how an emergence of the coronavirus. This is the first sort of canary in the coal mine that we realized, oh, this is going to be a problem, because they quarantined the ship and then it started to spread through the ship. And like something like 700 cases ended up from a cruise ship. And I've been on big cruise ships. 700 people, no matter the size of the cruise ship, is a significant number. Well, the other thing I find interesting about this is I actually took a cruise 2 weeks after this happened. The last time I was on a cruise ship was on Valentine's Day weekend in 2020. And we were one of the last cruises to set sail because we got back in the middle of February and a month later, everything shut down. So it's an interesting looking back on this. And I want to see this documentary because, like I said, I was on a cruise ship pretty much at that same time. It's just that one was in Japan where it was in Asia where the disease started spreading. So it got hit first. But a month later, they shut everything down and then cruise ports are still shut down in the States. So I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit about this, just more for my curiosity as somebody who takes cruises. The next one I want to hit is In the Heights, which is coming to theaters this summer and HBO Max, because it's a Warner Brothers release, on June 11th.
There's a breeze off the Hudson, and just when you think you're sick of living here, the memory floods in, the morning light off the fire escapes, the nights in Bennett Park blasting Big Pun tapes. It's a story of a block that was disappearing. Once upon a time, in a faraway land called Washington Heights. Who's gonna notice we're gone? When it came to dreams, we had to keep scraping by.
This was supposed to come out last year, and now the vaccinations are rolling out. I got my first vaccine shot. I got the Jolene vaccine, which is the Moderna one that Dolly Parton helped fund. I told my family, I said, if I start growing huge breasts and playing the guitar and speaking in a Tennessee accent, get me checked out. But a lot of people are getting vaccinated, and so I think that the rollout's going really, really well. So hopefully, by the end of the summer, things can die down a bit and we can protect the population. And that way, maybe by June 11th, some people can go see In the Heights in the theaters. And the thing is, I'm not a big musical guy. I like some musicals, but I thought Hamilton was fine, but I didn't see the wonder in it that everybody else did just because I'm not a fan of the music. And this looks like it has similar music. You know, it has the same style and the same cadence that Hamilton has. So it certainly has Lin-Manuel Miranda's fingerprints all over it, which it should. But it looks like it's going to be at least something cool to watch, as opposed to Hamilton, which was staged. This looks like they're really going to be taking advantage of the visuals. And of course, you'd expect nothing less from John Chu, who is, of course, directing it. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Courier and staged season 2. guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new movies that are out in theaters, or at least one of them that's out in theaters this week. And that is The Courier. Benedict Cumberbatch stars as a London businessman who is recruited by the CIA and MI6 to carry intel from a Russian government official during the Cold War.
This is unexpected. I can't believe I'm actually having lunch with spies. I'm just a salesman.
Exactly. You're a civilian, so the KGB won't be watching.
It would be a real service to Great Britain.
Everyone you meet, assume they're KGB. Every Russian is an eye of the state. From now on, you will be selling one thing. The idea that you are an ordinary businessman and nothing more than an ordinary businessman.
It's a spy movie. Absolutely a spy movie because it's about spying. But it's not a James Bond movie. I love James Bond. I'm a huge fan of the series. But I am the first to say the movies are absurd. Now, you go back to something like maybe like the second James Bond movie, From Russia with Love, where the gadgets were small and his missions were more about secretive running around. I wouldn't say that's a realistic one, but at least it's got its feet somewhat planted near reality. But you know, look at stuff like GoldenEye, where he's driving a tank and all that. I mean that's just absurd stuff. And that's okay. I mean, I like the movies for what they are. Real spy movies are like something that like you'd see in a John le Carré book or adaptation of his work. It's people sitting in rooms listening to other people. Spy work is incredibly dull. It's just high stakes. And you got, you know, I mean, if you get caught, you get killed. And it's sometimes very exciting to escape with it. But they're not really action oriented things. Spying is a lot of sneaking around. And that's basically what this movie is. And it's a true story. It's based on a true story about this businessman. It leads up to the Cuban Missile Crisis because this guy high up in the Russian government, he was very concerned that Nikita Khrushchev was going to go completely off his rocker and try to start World War III. And so he took it upon himself to reach out to the West, and they needed a way to funnel that information and get it back from the West. And so instead of putting a regular spy in there, they put in this laissez-faire businessman, this guy who he goes out for drinks too much. He woos his clients. He tries to open up business channels, and they used him, not a regular spy. And it's a really actually a great performance by Benedict Cumberbatch. He is fantastic in the movie. It's himself because I mean, he's a great actor, and I think we've had plenty of chances to see him as a great actor, but most people in certainly in America, most people know him as like Doctor Strange, you know. Maybe they know he did the voice for Smaug in the in the Lord of the Rings movie or the Hobbit movies, and they know him as Sherlock on the BBC, and he's great in those roles, but those roles are very hyper real. You know, Doctor Strange is not exactly a down-to-earth guy. Neither is Sherlock. I mean, Sherlock is, it's over the top, it's overdone, it's meant to be this very extreme character. This is a regular guy, and he plays a regular guy, and it shows him actually having, a regular human relationship and human feelings as he's dealing with some pretty heavy stuff. You know, of course, being a spy, you can't tell anybody. You can't tell your wife. And so he's got to keep it hidden from her. And there's a lot of sneaking around and getting worried. It reminds me, the closest I could think of in tone to this, not even something like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, although that gets close. Something like, there was that movie, or a series, on Netflix. It was an Israeli series called, I think it was called The Spy. And it starred Sacha Baron Cohen as this Israeli operative. He was infiltrating Syria and became really high up there. And that's what this movie reminds me of. But it's just exciting enough to kind of like draw you in with the spy stuff, but it's really more the human drama. And then the spy stuff also even takes a back seat to, you know, some of the repercussions that happen and what can go on. And that's where Benedict Cumberbatch really shines. He does a great performance in this, and it's very nuanced. So if you're a fan of his, I check this out, but it's an exciting little movie. It's fun. I don't know if it's going to be remembered, but it's going to be one of those that maybe you'll see in 10 years or so and go, oh yeah, that was actually a really good movie. So yeah, I'm going to have to say that The Courier totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the next review and talk about Staged Season 2. Michael Sheen and David Tennant continue their quarantine show in which Hollywood is looking to reshoot Staged Season 1 for an American audience.
Teach him a craft instead. Get him up a chimney. Pickpocketing.
But in all of a twist.
You could send him out across London and back they'd come, their little withered arms full of plunder.
I bring home some neckerchiefs and wristwatches.
I sold my legs, Father. Can I have a little morsel?
It's not a bad idea.
Just planting seeds.
It is in stark contravention of social distancing laws.
Oh, well, I assumed if you were okay with your kids robbing total strangers, you'd be fine with them ignoring the 2 meter rule.
I think ethically it's a grey area.
For those who don't know the background, this is on Hulu, but originally started on the BBC, and Hulu's imported it. And at the beginning of the coronavirus lockdown a year ago, David Tennant and Michael Sheen, who had become friends, they had worked on the TV series Good Omens together. One's Scottish and one's Welsh, and they poke fun at each other for that. And so they decided to put together one of those quarantine series, and it's about a guy named Simon who, and he's the director of it. He's trying to get them to rehearse a play, and they're like trying to herd cats because they are fighting with each other and they have issues going on in their home life, and they're doing it all over Zoom. And I know the last thing most people in this country want to see, or in this world want to see, are more Zoom calls. I think we're all sick of them by now. But I think this is a very clever way of doing it. And it reminds me of those movies, the Trip movies, like the Trip to Spain, the Trip to Greece, the ones with Steve Coogan and Rob Broynton, where they play exaggerated versions of themselves. And that's what they do in Stage. And it's very funny. The first season, 6 episodes long. The second season, which aired, I think, in the UK in January, it finally hit Hulu this week. It goes to a different level of meta because they're still in lockdown. They're still in quarantine. They're still having to worry about the coronavirus. So they can't, you know, like David keeps getting an opportunity to go to a different set and then they cancel on him because he can't travel to this place or that place. And he's going completely stir crazy. At the same time, they're trying to reshoot the production company is trying to reshoot the first season of Stage. So there's an awareness that they made this TV series Staged, and then there's this other level of meta where they're reflecting on that. So it's like two stages of meta deep, which I found really hilarious. And it gets absurd at times. I mean, really absurd with some of the production stuff that you see going on behind the scenes. They've got some great guest stars on this one. You have to understand British humor. I mean, you really, really, if you want to understand British humor in Welsh and Scottish accents, this is the show to watch. And a lot of it is, you know, and again, there's always the debate, what's written and what's not, what's improvised. But you basically end up with two very good actors who have great chemistry together, playing absurd, exaggerated versions of themselves on top of the absurd and exaggerated versions of themselves from the last series. So it's just offbeat enough for it to really work as a British humor type of sitcom. So Stage Season 2 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Zack Snyder's Justice League and Slacks. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about something that's not in theaters, even though it's on HBO Max. That is Zack Snyder's Justice League. Director Zack Snyder adds additional content and re-edits Justice League to restore his original version of the superhero team-up story.
I had a dream, almost like a premonition.
I think there's an attack coming.
My lord. This world will fall.
I need warriors. I'm building an alliance to defend ourselves.
If you can't bring down the charging bull and don't wave the red cape at it.
First, you have to understand the history behind this. In the middle of producing and directing the Justice League, Zack Snyder's daughter committed suicide. And that's horrible. And rightfully so, he quit the production. He had to take care of his family. And so he had to quit. And I think everybody was on board. They're like, look, man, you do what you got to do. This is horrible. You got to take care of things. And so because they were spending like $300 million they spent on this movie, they needed to finish it. They had a release date and they had to keep rolling on it. So they got a different director to step in. And that was Joss Whedon. It is not uncommon to see directors change. In fact, very famously, Richard Donner was directing Superman 2, and then he was, I can't remember whether he's fired or he left or whatever happened, and they got somebody else to finish directing it. And it has been, it's happened before where a director will shoot a good chunk of the movie and they have to change directors for whatever reason. Well, Justice League, if you remember back in 2017, it came out, kind of came and went. It made some money, but it didn't clear the absurdly huge number that it had to break even. And it was a bit of a flop. It was not the Avengers, which is what Warner Brothers wanted. They had had the Wonder Woman movie earlier that summer, and then they did Aquaman and Shazam. And so people kind of forgot about Justice League, kind of left that to go bury itself. It's sort of a redheaded stepchild. And when you watch it, it's a Frankenstein movie. I personally, I didn't have a problem with the theatrical version of the Justice League. I realized it was, you know, a little bit clunky, but I understood that is when you change directors and you went from people with very different styles. I mean, like if say Michael Bay was shooting a movie and had to leave and you brought in Peter Berg, you could marginally make it look like the same movie because they're very similar directors. But if you had somebody like Michael Bay shooting a movie and you brought in Wes Anderson to finish it or Sofia Coppola, it's gonna look weird. So what they did is Warner Brothers, which I respect them for, they said we're gonna put some money in. It was about $70 million they put into this to finish effects and get music. And they allowed him to finish his movie as he saw it. Now, over this time, another little bit of background, Joss Whedon's become persona non grata because everyone's saying, oh, he's abusive and mean on set, and he called Charisma Carpenter fat, blah, blah, blah. Plus, you had Ray Fisher coming out complaining about the Warner Brothers executives at the time, but Zack Snyder basically made the movie that essentially he was going to make. And it's mixed. Your mileage is going to vary on this one, depending on who you are. If you're a huge Zack Snyder fan, you're probably going to love it because it reeks of Zack Snyder. It's all his stuff. If you like the vision that he put forth in Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, especially if you liked the director's cut, the 3-hour director's cut on Blu-ray more, yes, you are going to get a very authentically Zack Snyder movie. And again, I commend Warner Brothers for putting money into doing this. I think that's a great thing for them to do, and it shows a lot of trust in their fans. The other thing that, and on the good side, is there's a little more character development, particularly in Cyborg, who needed the most because he didn't have any previous film, and not a whole lot of people know who Cyborg is. And his origin, his background, was really truncated in the theatrical version. And I think it's just because they didn't want to focus on somebody who wasn't a big movie star like the other movie stars in this. But still, that was a big thorn in Ray Fisher's side. So you do get the background on Cyborg, which I it's okay. That's good. I don't think Ray Fisher's a particularly remarkable actor in this. I think he's still very wooden, but that's just me. You also get a little bit more development of Steppenwolf and the bad guys. It's a little bit more. It's still, though, Steppenwolf still is this big CGI monster who's just there to destroy things. It's the same thing with Darkseid, where they have a bigger bad guy who people know from the comics, who's sort of, he's like Thanos, but he's the DC version. And so you've got him in there, too. But again, these guys are just CGI monsters. They really don't give any sort of character development to them. And that goes to the negatives on it. First of all, the movie's 4 hours long, doesn't need to be. If half the movie wasn't in slow motion, it probably would be move a little quicker. I mean, fine, you know, the flash scenes, do those in slow motion to kind of show everything. But do we need to have Lois Lane walking across the street with a coffee cup in slow motion? Also, speaking of Lois Lane, wildly underdeveloped. No development there. She is just there to grieve. This movie couldn't pass a Bechdel test if it tried. All 4 hours could not pass it. It's still that very macho, very male-centric superhero movie, which is odd considering Wonder Woman was the biggest draw at that point. The other problem is, it's impossible to not compare it to Marvel. And if you look at like Darkseid or Steppenwolf, you compare him to Thanos, the thing that worked with Thanos is you saw him developed in the background for years and talked about in stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy and really not have him in the front. And then when you got to Infinity War, you understood where he's coming from. He was a genocidal maniac, but at least you understood his thinking, where no villain is a villain in their own mind. They think they're doing the right thing. And Thanos thought he was doing the right thing, getting rid of half the population for crowd control, basically. It's like Magneto in the X-Men movies. That's one of the best developed villains because you understand he's not doing anything evil in his mind. He's doing what's right. So Thanos is a much better developed character than Darkseid or Steppenwolf ever could hope to be. The other problem is, in dealing with grief, which is really the only reason that Lois Lane exists in the film, grief was already so examined incredibly well in WandaVision that you can't help but compare it. And the other problem is it's presented in 4:3 full frame, so it doesn't fill up your TV screen. And I understand why they did it, because his vision was to release it in IMAX, and I got that. Okay. The big problem with that is most people who are watching the movie aren't going to understand that. Most people are watching the movie, you're going to be like, I want it to fill the frame. We've gotten used to the bars at the top and bottom, but the bars on the side for a big movie, and it's not getting an IMAX release. I could understand preserving that and releasing it in IMAX. But if you're going to redo the entire movie, just give it a widescreen look. And if you're just delivering it to a television in somebody's living room, which is all this is doing, I don't even think they're doing a minor. They might do a minor IMAX run, but I don't think they are. So it seems like a weird choice. I understand why from a filmmaking standpoint, but from a marketing standpoint, I mean, seriously, when I started watching, I got a screener of it early. I started watching the screener and I was like, did they send me the wrong one? Because it was cropped. You know, I get used to it. I can worry about different. I don't freak out about black bars on the side or the top, but it seems strange to me. So overall, it's a grand vision of a movie. I do think that there's a lot of hyperbole going on. I think people saw it initially, and because it's popular to hate on Joss Whedon, and it's popular to say you hated the Justice League movie, oh, but this movie was a masterpiece. It's not a masterpiece. This thing would have crashed and burned in a 4-hour release in cinemas. It's an interesting thing to watch. And again, I commend Warner Brothers for doing it. But it's not the beginning and end of cinema, and I really don't want to see any more of Zack Snyder's superhero movies at this point. But still, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's actually it for this segment. I'm going to have to review Slacks in the next segment. I spent too much time talking about the Justice League. But when I get back, I'm going to talk about Slacks, I'm going to talk about Invincible, and I'm going to talk about the home cinema roundup featuring Falcon and the Winter Soldier. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. I got to do one that I missed last segment because I spent too much time talking about Zack. See, Zack Snyder's Justice League is so long, it makes me take longer to talk about. Anyways, let's talk about the other one that I was going to talk about last segment, and that is Slacks. The night before a product launch, workers in a clothing store are shocked to discover a pair of jeans that attacks and kills unsuspecting victims.
You are here for the new collection turnaround. This is such an important night for us.
A lot of people have been very keen to get their eyes on it.
Jeans that automatically adapt to your body size. The Super Shapers!
Should we call the police? What if there's a killer out there?
Are you afraid there's a killer?
out there?
Yeah.
You can find this exclusively on Shudder, which, of course, I've talked about in the past as the horror and thriller streaming service. It's like $5 a month. It's worth it if you love horror movies. And this is somewhat of a comedy. I mean, there are parts of it that it's trying to be serious, and it does try to make a point. But it's about a pair of killer jeans, which is totally ridiculous. But that's okay, because it's kind of fun that way. It reminds me of that movie Bad Hair I talked about a couple months ago on Hulu, about the woman who worked in a 90s, like a BET-type video channel, and her hair, like people's hair was attacking people. It's that level of absurdity, this almost bizarro humor that then dovetails into a more serious discussion. And that's kind of what they do with Slacks, because it's about this super popular clothing line, and they have this store, but the store, they charge a ridiculous amount of money for their clothes. And like, it's the main character is this girl who just got her job there. And they say, well, you have to wear clothes from the current product line, so you have to go buy these. And she ends up spending a couple $100s, but she doesn't get her discount because she's technically not an employee until midnight. And all this stuff where they nickel and dime you, where the fashion industry just gouges the prices and people are stupid for buying into it. Then you've got this pair of slacks that they're going to be launching the next day that are going to be, oh, because the whole thing is they slim and they fit you perfectly. But they're alive and they also will eat you and cut you up, which is, you know, that's your trade-off for looking good, I guess. But I gotta say, it's silly enough that it's funny. I mean, when you got a pair of jeans killing people, you gotta admit, it is laughable. Now, it does dovetail, you know, about the third act, it kind of makes itself serious and it gives some explanation behind it. And then it actually is making a point, which I think it does fine. I mean, you know, you can't get upset at movies if they're making a point that you're like, I don't like to be preached at. I'm like, movies preach at you all the time. Like Star Wars preaches constantly. You just thought of it didn't because you were a little kid and you were like, pew, 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 aliens and robots. Isn't that cool? But you don't understand all the subtext until you get older. So it's fun and it's silly, but it's, yeah, I gotta say Slacks is an utter riot. It's worth checking out. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Invincible. A teenager whose father is the most powerful superhero on the planet comes into his own as he develops superpowers himself and joins a team of crime fighters.
I fought to keep this planet safe. Your power's gotta be due any day now, son.
I'm scared, Dad. What if I can't do this?
Follow me.
You need to be better. After everything he's done, how can I live up to all that?
You need to decide what kind of hero you want to be.
That was you, in the blue and the yellow.
Why don't you meet the team after school?
May we count on you in the future?
Yeah, I think so.
This is available on Amazon Prime. They're dropping the first three episodes this week, and then I think they're doing one per week, which is the standard release system that Amazon Prime does. This is based on a graphic novel series by Robert Kirkman, who is best known for doing The Walking Dead. So you can understand where the mentality comes from on this. Now, here's the thing you got to watch. Parents out there, if you see this as a superhero movie, it's not just that. It kind of deconstructs and examines some of the tropes in superheroes. And it does it in a very adult way. There is some extremely graphic violence in this. So when you watch it, it looks like it's any other animated superhero movie, you know, like not Saturday morning anymore, but you have the, you know, it looks like a comic book. It looks like something a kid could watch. I would not let a kid watch this one. It is way too violent and gory and it's got some real disturbing stuff going on. In the first episode, too. So consider that your warning. Read about it before you show anybody this. Now, if you're a grown up and you're, you know, fully formed, it's a really interesting movie because it dissects the reality of superheroes. And, you know, sort of like The Boys, which is also on Amazon, and also deconstructs the entire superhero genre, this sort of posits what would it really be like if there was a big super battle downtown? What would happen to the innocent bystanders? You know, like even in like a movie like Man of Steel, you have buildings falling and it's happening in the background and there's dust, but there's real lives lost. And I think The Boys does it almost in a too dark way. I think this still frames it as a superhero story, but it just has that in the background. It's really a pretty decent series. I enjoyed watching it. I'm curious to finish it because I only got to see three or four episodes in its initial run. So it's out now on Prime. Totally worth checking out, I'd say, especially if you want a different look at what it means to be a superhero and what can come of it. So I'm going to say Invincible rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is going to be on the Disney Plus series Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Sam and Bucky from the Avengers struggle with their personal lives while recovering from the blip and facing a powerful new foe.
Mr. Barnes, why does Sam aggravate you?
15 seconds to drop!
So what's our plan? Hey.
Great. Superheroes cannot be allowed to exist. I have no intention to leave my work unfinished.
Where do we start?
Oh, yeah?
Right on the heels of WandaVision, we've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Now, WandaVision was a huge gamble. And the first two episodes looked like they were just going to be aping TV series and doing stuff about nostalgia and jokes. But it did develop into something bigger and better and really is grounded with the way that they show Elizabeth Olsen's character, Wanda, but in particular Elizabeth Olsen as an actor, struggling with grief and trauma and loss. This looks like it's tackling similar real things. Like, for example, Sam, the Falcon, is coming home to the fact that his sister's struggling to keep their business and the property that they own and how to keep things going. Also struggling to figure out how the world works, having half the people for 5 years and then suddenly the population doubles and you get everybody back, but you suddenly have to account for everybody. At the same time, you've got Bucky, you know, playing the Winter Soldier, is coming to terms with being a hired killer and dealing with the trauma there and the fact that he's no longer that and he works with the Avengers, but for what, 70, 80 years, he was a ruthless killer. And so he's dealing with that and dealing with guilt and PTSD and all this kind of stuff. And it's not as out there as WandaVision was. I mean, WandaVision quite literally lived in its own little universe. Falcon and the Winter Soldier seems like it's a little more grounded and they're following a terrorist group, and they're setting the seeds for that. So I have to say the first episode is good. It's only six episodes long and they're releasing one each week. I just hope that they get enough story of these guys in the forefront, because I've never felt either the characters of Sam or Bucky were enough to carry an entire movie or series. So yeah, it's absolutely worth checking out. First episode's on Disney Plus. You're going to get five more over the next 5 weeks. And this is what's going to carry you into hopefully Black Widow when that comes out this summer. Anyways, I'm going to say right now, Falcon and the Winter Soldier just kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray are Psycho Gorman, Don't Tell a Soul, and Steelbooks of The Cat Returns and Whispers of the Heart. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Nobody and Solar Opposites Season 2. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.